by sending plenty of intelligence officials and equipment now operating even from the Galapagos Islands, while the Ecuadorian people have not received any benefits in terms of the treatment of Ecuadorian migrants in the U.S., or Fulbright scholarships, or better trade opportunities, and so on. And unfortunately, what we see is the part of the Biden administration, and especially certain high-ranking senators in the U.S., supporting Lasso personally. Lasso has immense wealth of probably $500 million now in the U.S., stashed in trusts in South Dakota, also in real estate and shady properties in South Florida, a certain LLC structure that, you know, doesn't... is not very transparent, but which is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth. And we now see that these properties that he owns, even, you know, he owns an offshore bank in Panama as well, are in violation of Ecuadorian's law that prohibits government officials from having property in
tax. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Tune in to Talking Earth, a show dedicated to showcasing our local poetry scene. Join hosts Patrick Picard, Barbara Lamorticella, and Walt Curtis for Talking Earth on the second and third Mondays of each month from 10 to 11 p.m. More information can be found on kboo.fm under schedule.
Hey yo, this is Cliven. You're listening to KBOO.
Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. We are broadcasting live. We are broadcasting this Monday. We are live May 22nd. And this is Cecil Prescott, and I'm here with...
Me.
Celeste Carey.
Good morning, good morning. Hey. How are you doing this morning, Cecil?
I'm doing well. Is it... You remember that commercial a few years ago, a couple of decades, I guess, more, but in terms of, is it live or is it, and then
Memorex.
It would name the product?
Mm. Yeah, I already said it too late.
No.
You didn't kill me.
Oh. Well, are we live or is it artificial intelligence?
Well, you know, that's debatable because you could not tell. You would not be able to tell. You know, and we've talked a lot about how deep fakes and other things that can affect our ability to both make sound and rational decisions based on accurate information because, well, deep fakes are just what they sound like. Fakery at a level that's hard to perceive or suss out without sophisticated equipment sometimes. But we're not going there today. Today we're going to talk about some quantum leaps that will be coming to, sad to say, an area near you, a municipality near you. Now, what are we talking about? Well, we've been talking about all kinds of different surveillance lately. We've talked about gunshot detection surveillance. We've talked about surveillance when you are walking around the streets, especially like you find in the United Kingdom, because closed circuit TV cameras, aka CCTV, are a thing there everywhere. And it's generally accepted and, as a matter of fact, it's counted upon in parts of daily life. And so it's no surprise that this was something that you would find coming out of the UK. But do not assume that it's not coming here. We here in Portland, despite having a vociferous, vehement volume of dissent against it, are entertaining the idea of having gunshot detection surveillance, which, depending upon which vendor and which technology is used, could have at least sound recorded, if not sound and image. And so that doesn't seem like a big thing to some people. It seems like, well, that's just, you know, if you got nothing to hide, there it is. You got nothing to worry about. But here's the problem. Coming down the pike is something a lot more insidious and frightening. And that is augmented traffic cameras. What do I mean by augmented traffic cameras? Well, AI, also known as artificial intelligence, just to make sure I unpack these things, is a common feature in just about everything we do. And now it is going to be rolled out in the United Kingdom as an extra, what can I call it? Shall I call it vigilant? Deterrent.
Level of security?
Or? Extra vigilance. That, you know, and vigilance may not be the word I want. It is a level of security, but I'm thinking about, like, you know how when we're hyper-vigilant, we're looking at everything? Okay, well, with regard to personal safety and personal space, we're looking at everything and trying to determine where there's possible threats. Well, imagine AI doing that at a traffic stop, attached to a traffic camera. Only this particular brand of traffic camera can see inside your car. And it can see that, well, you know, Mr. Prescott, you don't have your seatbelt on. And we're going to give you a ticket for that while you're stopped at the light. Oh, and let us look at your little registration tag on your plates. You know, those are expired. We're going to give you a ticket for that, too. And what? Are you texting? Oh, it's in your lap, but you think we can't see it? And maybe the tint on your windows is too dark. So you can get 4 tickets while you're stopped at a light. And if you think that's not coming here to the United States, don't fool yourself.
And you're just telling me this as if this might be a problem or people should be concerned about this, or as if people have not already accepted the fact that we are under surveillance at all times?
Well, here's the thing, though. And we don't always think of it this way, but we want surveillance. We do. We have monitors in our homes. We have motion-sensitive cameras outside our businesses. My youngest sister and her husband have monitors inside the house to watch, you know, their grandkids. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want surveillance. We're buying cameras for our doorbells all the time. So, yeah, we want it. But do we want it at this level? What's a slippery slide? And I guess part of the question that we'll ask today is, you know, are you ready? Are you one of these people to say, well, I have nothing to hide, so what's the deal? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Are you prepared for this? And I know, you know, some of our listeners will think, well, yeah, I have nothing to hide. This adds a measure of safety. The level of crime that they experience in other countries is a lot lower than it is here. Maybe this is something that I need to help. Maybe this will help us. Mm-hmm. Will it? I don't know. But that's one of the questions that we'll be asking today. And what's your take on it, Cecil?
Well, I think in part, I think a lot of people are caught in between because we realize, I realize that tomorrow is already here, mm-hmm. is my understanding. And so do I have the ability, do I just accept it as inevitable that slowly and certainly my life, our lives will continue to be under surveillance, and also in terms of the so-called desire for privacy is slowly and inevitably disappearing. At the same time, it's not only talking about one's own personal safety, but in terms of of organization or society, what level of surveillance or invasion is acceptable. Now, I as an individual may have, you know, quote, nothing to hide, but what does it mean about the safety and security of knowledge or information that is shared in either institutions, your jobs or your schools, or something else that we expect something our society to be secure and hold? I may not have anything to hide, but what does that mean in terms of talking about organizations we are a part of, and also the ongoing threat of government, not only government surveillance, which I think in some degree here in the United States we believe we have some control over in terms of our process of government and elections and all of that, but in terms of corporate surveillance, and we don't even attempt to believe naively that we have some control over that. So I don't know, in terms of all these multinational corporation, each one who has not only information that I freely give, but what do they do with it? I'm less worried about what the city of Portland knows and controls than I do over some multinational corporation. So can't we just all go back to a simpler time, was my question?
I don't see that happening. You know, that we've heard this expression so many times, you can't put the genie back in the bottle.
Yes.
You know, barn door, horse, gone, etc. So, you know, I don't see that as an option. And you know, maybe it is. But here's, you know, I mean, you said you're not so worried about governments collecting your information as you are businesses.
Well, not I'm worried, but I if I continue under the predominant myth that in a democracy we have some control, some say in our government, we do not even live under that illusion with private corporation.
No, we don't.
You know, even if you, you know, a stockholder and go to corporate, you know, no, it's more difficult.
So am I to gather then that your concern is primarily based on what's going to be done with my information, more so than the intrusiveness of it?
Well, perhaps. Well, maybe, because I assume, and maybe I should push back, we should push back, that information is, we can gain it back and have control over it. But, you know, I don't know how that is possible when we so freely and apparently willingly give information or access to private information to all sorts of people, persons, corporations. Every time you turn on your phone.
Every time you not only download but use an app, yes. For example. Well, you know, a lot of our folks, you know, some of our listeners, they try to opt out. That's not going to be an option, you know, in modern life. Being able to opt out is as much of an illusion as us living in a democracy. Did I just say that? Yeah,
yes.
I did.
It's
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess if I repeat it long enough, I'll get used to it. Mm-hmm. I'll get used to it. Well, anyway, you know, what questions do you want to pose for our listeners?
Well, I'm wondering how people navigate in their daily lives, sharing of information and what things they need, feel that they need to do. You mentioned how many listeners might say, I'm going to resist this. And, you know, we've had callers who say, I don't use a computer or internet. I still have a rotary plug-in phone and stuff like that. And that's okay.
Well, that's okay. And this then, I guess, would be one of those conversations where we could say, okay, well, you know, we already know what you do.
And how then a question might be, well, in terms of our society or community, how do we live? And so, you know, you may choose to, I don't know how people resist it, because I may choose to never use the internet, but, you know, do you bank? do you go to the store? Do you use a credit card?
Use a debit card.
A debit card? So do people just go around? I'm wondering if they're denying what is the reality, or are there ways in which, and this is where I think in terms of belief in the ability of having some influence in our government, are there ways in which we might legislate things to uphold, to prevent, to protect the rights and the privacy of individuals? And we see legislations that governments, local, national, and international bodies are doing to try to control the access of information and protect privacy.
Well, you know, not too long ago, Governor Kotek signed this bill, and this bill will allow the use of photo radar anywhere in Oregon, and all you got to do is pay to play. And so this is about 10 days, 2 weeks ago, something like that. And the challenge is that this is the slope. We're on the steep incline. Now, where is the tipping point on the slippery slope? Yeah. Is it like at 45 degrees? And I'm being both, you know, rhetorical, but it's a real thing, you know. And again, I remember having this thought about it, and that is, you know, again, people say, well, I'm not doing anything, and so since I'm not breaking the law, I don't care. And my issue is maybe what should be considered is there's nothing in my life that I want seen by everybody. And you know, now you say to our listeners, are there legislative pushbacks maybe we need to consider, you know? And I guess it's also a question of how are you going to manage your life, how are you going to handle the intrusiveness of this type of lifestyle, of being exposed to all of this surveillance. Are you going to be able to handle this? Where are we headed mentally and emotionally? Is this something safe?
Right. And also, you know, am I willing to give up the convenience I've accepted by going here?
Well,
our number's here, 503-231-8187. We want to hear your thoughts. Again, 503-231-8187. And let's go to Edie. Good morning, Edie.
Good morning. Please give people the information about the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF. Hmm. And in Oregon, in Eugene, the Civil Liberties Defense Center, CLDC, Digital Security. They have trainings, they have workshops, and they have downloads in English and Spanish. Please let folks know about Tor, and DuckDuckGo, as well as Signal and Rise Up and Proton Mail.
Oh my gosh.
And
okay, well, here's one of the things though. Signal can be, if I'm not mistaken, can be either intercepted or hacked. Now,
correct.
You
anything
know,
on the, anything you
anything.
Use your iPhone for, anything
Any
that you type or say into a Mac or an iPhone or whatever, or a PC or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
They can check, as they advertised in 2001, saying, oh, we could surveil all this via this information. But also, I'd like us to really consider alternatives. Just because I don't do anything violent, criminal, or what I consider unethical or wrong, the fact that I'm in a certain place at a certain time, or that I'm talking with certain people across the political, economic, or racial, whatever continuum, mm-hmm. means that I can be grouped with, or mm-hmm. they can be blamed, or I could be blamed, or I could be targeted. Also, I want us to consider how we want to secure safety on the roads, because I would rather have cameras on the roads than cops with guns. I'd rather have a bureaucrat who just says, okay, this is the speeding or the red light violation or whatever, who gets the ticket, you know, via that car. Without guns, without racial profiling. But I'm concerned that if people are concerned that on 82nd Avenue or Killings Birth or MLK, where they target poor black lefties or people of color or immigrants, that then folks will speed through neighborhoods unsafely to try to avoid it.
Oh.
I don't have the exact answers, but I want us to be a lot more considerate and careful about things. And, for example, posting pictures of your babies where people
can see
GPS, where it is, where the baby was. I had a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old who were kidnapped in the hospital. So I'm keenly aware that 45 years in Portland or so, I don't approve of how we police, and I don't approve of corporate surveillance, but I want us to come up with some way. Like, I don't approve of body cameras, especially when the police can decide when it's on or off, what's directed it, what's blocking it, who controls the access, who's spied on, and they're still not, police are still not held accountable. So I don't have the answers, but I want us to consider those questions also those resources.
Okay. Well, that's plenty. You've actually maybe more than we actually have time for.
but thank you. You know, one thing that you raised, Edie, that maybe I want to hear Celeste's thoughts, was in terms, I had never considered in terms of your reflection of in terms of traffic cams and how that might help prevent police violence. So this, I hadn't considered that.
Traffic cams?
Well, traffic cams, and, you know, a bureaucrat saying, oh, that person is speeding, you know, you press a button and automatically they get a ticket, as opposed to being stopped by police. Will that help prevent unreasonable police violence?
Well,
it certainly would prevent folks with guns intervening with people.
Not necessarily. Because all they have to do is send a the system in Britain, and I mean, it's here's the thing people need to consider, is that just because they designed the technology doesn't mean, and it's used in one country, doesn't mean that it won't be attempted or promoted here. And companies may make something that's slightly different, as we all know, in one country than it is here. But, I mean, the technology is designed to be able to send an officer out whenever they want to. So just because you're caught on traffic cam and you get an automatic ticket doesn't mean that they can't send an officer out to intercept you if they deem it necessary. And that's one of the concerns. It's like, that doesn't preclude, you know, a live officer showing up. They have the make, model, and plate of your car. They have a picture of you because this new technology can see inside of your vehicle.
Well, I think, I'll let Edie have the last word, but I think as they mentioned to us, that sometimes we have to ask questions we did not consider. And I'm thankful, Edie, for some of the thoughts you raised this morning, because it for me it said, "Huh, I hadn't thought about that." Your thoughts, Edie?
Well, I'm just so grateful we have KABU. The FBI and others had studied for over 30 years, beginning a little after KABU had been around 30 years, a study of this size and larger cities across the nation on their preparedness for martial law or mass disasters. And Portland, way above second place, was best prepared because of a sense of us, of community, of caring, of resilience, of creativity, of critical thinking, of alternative problem solving. And that they blamed KABU for and wanted to take over, destroy, or outlaw, or outcost KABU, because they saw KABU was what I would consider the hero and they would consider the enemy. So again, we need to love KABU, support it, think things through. We don't always have easy answers, but let's be brave and work together.
Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for that, for sure. You're listening to Your Community Connection, KBOO. Here in Portland, we are at 90.7 FM. If you are in Corvallis, Albany, Philomath, it is 104.3 FM. And Hood River, Oregon, and White Salmon, Washington, it is 91.9 FM. And everywhere else, KBOO.FM. This is More Talk Radio. I am here with Cecil. My name is Celeste, and we welcome your calls. You know, our topic today is just looking at the ever-expanding role that AI has in our life. And in this particular instance, we're talking about augmented traffic cameras and just marking the expansion. I almost want to call it overreach, but you know, it is overreach of AI into our lives and surveillance in our lives, and just being aware and trying to spark some discussion about it. And Cecil's also said, well, can we consider ways to maybe legislatively put a halt to it? I'm a little bit more pessimistic. Usually I'm pretty much an optimist. I'm a little bit more pessimistic, though, because, you know, once you get the toe in the door, it's nothing to slide the whole foot in.
Right, certainly. And it just, I agree with you. Maybe I was going back to an early time in my life where, you know, I actually believe in the Ron DeSantis understanding of America. I'm worried and concerned, and I think you're wise. And, you know, it's the door has been opened. Things are fleeing, and I'm not sure what legislative safeguards are available either on the state, local, or national level. I do believe, however, that we need to as Edie suggested to ask some critical questions about where we are going. And perhaps if we aren't able to slow down things that are happening so that we can at least be aware as they come along. That may not be possible. I'm somewhat wary you know, I offer the suggestion about legislative action,
mm-hmm.
but then I'm saying to myself, you know, some of our legislators should not be legislating about things they don't know, and in terms of where they're getting their information from, you know, so.
Well, you know, part of the problem is this thing human beings seem to be prone to, hubris, you know, arrogance, mm-hmm. pride,
yes.
and this whole idea that I know best, or I don't need instruction, or I can assemble this without reading the directions, you know, right. all of that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there are going to be those who think that they're doing it because we, great unwashed, don't have common sense and don't know what's good for ourselves. But, you know, but again, it's not just all the myriad of ways that our freedoms and our abilities and our activities and our rights are being eroded and curtailed. It's also looking at the psychological toll of all that. You know, so, you know, when we talk about this, I'm sure most people are thinking, oh, you boomers, you know.
Exactly.
Scared of everything. And it's not necessarily being afraid of everything. And as Edie pointed out, you know, we need to be aware that this is giving more power, and we need to figure out ways to slow the progression. And she did mention again the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF. And you can find them at EFF.org, I believe. Let me look at my... Yep, that's what it is.
Yep.
I had to look at my URL up here. You know, and so I know a lot of people say this is not a sexy topic. I don't use it. Or younger people might be thinking, look, I live on TikTok. I live on Instagram. I'm an influencer. I don't care what data they have on me. But we do. The funny thing about the way we operate is we both want it and we don't want it. 503-231-8187. We want it when we want to know who's snatching our packages that just got delivered.
Yes.
You know, we don't want it when we're at the self-checkout and or like at the Burger Doodle and it says, well, hi, Celeste. Thanks for coming. Haven't seen you in a long time. It's like, I don't really want to have this discussion with AI.
Well, you know, we all have ways in which we have love-hate relationship. And, you know, this is something I'm going to confess only to you, Celeste.
Okay.
And whoever else is listening.
I won't tell anybody else.
But I had to prepare a Sunday school lesson this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, ChatGPT helped me a whole lot. Wrote the lesson for me. So.
Oh, you had to tell me some more about this GPT. You know, because I'm curious. I haven't used it yet, but I bet it's going to be an adventure. We have a caller online. Good morning, John.
Oh, hello. One other thing about AI is facial recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Lowe's, okay? And so I was walking through, and you could see your image as you're walking in, and I had a red square immediately put all around my face
mm-hmm.
as I was walking there.
What were you wearing?
There's still, legal struggle in airports
mm-hmm.
where they don't want to get, you know, facial, you know, recognition going because they think it's an invasion of privacy.
Right.
And I used to work out at the airport, so I was talking to some of the people I used to work with, and they said, oh, yeah, it's still in the courts or whatever, you know, but they have it, and it's been incorporated in larger airports like O'Hara and JFK, and it's all about national security. They feel like they can catch the bad guy before it even happens by just, like I said, programming their face in the computers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Yeah, I mean, it's not. I guess it's a sort of an AI.
Yes,
it is. Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's just. Yeah. So that's why I'm. You know, it's just that it's whether you don't like the legality or the moral social thing about it. It's here.
It's and most it was definitely really, here.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of depressing a little bit. I was watching on one of the national news stations, and they had some people there. That this should be a big priority for Congress.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, it's more than just a genie out of the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at it as a, well, offensive thing happening instead of, you know, a defensive.
Yes.
If you know what I mean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And weaponizing it, that's all it is.
Well, that is true. It is weaponizing it. But, I mean, you know, in all honesty, it was designed as its end result as a weapon. So, you know, it's how we conceptualize what a weapon is, too. Not all weapons make you hurt physically, you know. Some of them do other things to you.
Yeah, but, you know, if they really want to, you know, mess with you or bad guys and stuff, I mean, they could just use the military intelligence. You know how they used to have, they meaning the army, whatever, release how they would get the drones, you know, kind of, what do you call it, aimed at, you know, like wedding parties in mm-hmm. Afghanistan and stuff like that, that try to catch, mm-hmm. you know, terrorists.
Yes.
Well, mm-hmm. you can imagine that was like 10, 15 years ago. You can mm-hmm. imagine what's going on right now.
Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah. But I thought I'd just give my 2 cents worth on that, whether you like it legally or socially, it's here.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, and just cross your fingers that you don't, you know, cross somebody that they could, you know, you know, get back at you. I don't know.
Okay.
Who knows?
All right.
Anyway, thanks for your time.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you so much. And you all continue to listen to KBOO-FM, More Talk Radio, and let's go to our next caller. Joan, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. I couldn't resist this topic.
Great.
Oh, my. It's about convenience Uber Alles. You know, life is so convenient. And if you want to know where it's going, all you have to do is look at China. They're going for it full speed and with the Uyghurs and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like it. And I don't think it's convenient. And I think to know where it's coming from, all you have to do is follow the money. That's what this is about. There's money to be made, and people are making it. And frankly, I don't think we should buy this stuff. And it's not just about, I mean, you know, a little bit of here, a talking refrigerator over there. I don't know if anybody likes what's happening when you try to get somebody, some company on the phone and you're talking to a robot. I don't think it's fun. It's somebody's idea of a high-tech futuristic nightmare. And at least as far as the consumers are concerned, I don't think we have to buy this crap one way or another.
Well,
and I do know that younger people are rebelling against it.
So how do we not buy into it if it's inevitable? What are ways in which you resist?
If I have a choice of buying a product that talks to me and all this crap, I don't have to buy it. And I really don't have to and do not participate in some of this toxic waste dump social media stuff. You can choose what you participate in and choose what you don't participate
in. To a degree, that's not as true as it used to be. If you use the library, even if you use the library on your rotary phone and you think you've got a person, you may be talking to AI, artificial intelligence.
Frankly, I can tell the difference.
Actually, that's what deepfakes are all about. You cannot. Nowadays, you cannot. You know, they have them. I've listened to them. They are so conversational that they can actually mimic the kind of conversation we're having right now.
I suppose they can, in a way. But one thing, if you really tune in, and you've got a good BS detector, you really can tell.
And if you can, what's next?
What's next?
Well, I mean, for you, if you can tell.
Yeah. So you're
speaking to your doctor's office and you get AI and you realize, oh, this is not Cheryl, this is AI, what do you do?
I would probably hang up, and I would probably, I happen to know my doctor, and I know what's happened. I hear what you're saying. I don't think it's easy, but to a certain extent, I think there are choices we can make, and this business about I've got nothing to hide, so I don't care. I mean, what you've got to lose is your freedom and your privacy, and we know this.
Right.
And it's about the money. And I'm not sure about breaking the monopoly of some of these high-tech companies. And one way to do it, there are products that are for sale, and you don't have to buy them. You really don't. And it's not about convenience. When I go into a store and I see these automatic machines where you're supposed to check out, I'll talk to the manager and I'll say, I don't want to use them. I don't know how to use them. Whether I do or not, please do it for me.
So they do it for you, and the same information that you would share, they do it for you. So you're
what
caught
is
in this.
I hear what you're saying. Uh-huh. I do think to the extent that we can rebel,
yes,
and figure out, because
right,
this is technology, right?
Yes.
And people who disagree with what's going on also can invent technology,
sure,
to counteract that. And to the extent that we can fight against it, I think we should. I don't think that we should just go blithely into, isn't this convenient, isn't this wonderful? It's not convenient, it's not wonderful.
Right.
And I realize that I can't fight this thing all by myself, but to the extent that I can refuse to participate, mm-hmm, and let people know why and how I feel about it, I do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think, I know people will say, oh, boomer, what the heck. But the thing about being older is that you've had some experience. And I think that there are generations and, you know, there are people who understand this, and it's not really about age. There's the repair it yourself movement,
yes,
that's resisting the idea that you buy this expensive thing and then you have to throw it away.
Yeah.
Oh, would you like the latest upgrade? No, I would not like the latest upgrade. Do you want 5G? It's so great. No, I do not want 5G. Do you want Wi-Fi installed in your house? No, I do not want it. What? You don't want it? No, N-O, I do not want it.
Yes. Well, I think what you're doing and mm-hmm, what I take from our conversation is that we continue to make choices. And we can
right,
make decisions for ourselves. The choices may seem meaningless or useless, but they aren't. And that we can find ways to resist and live.
And that we're not alone in this. There
That's
are many
right,
people who are.
All righty.
You know what I'm
yeah.
And even in the most dystopian fantasies that are written, there's always this outsider group. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I prefer to be in the outsider group. And that doesn't mean that I'm a total Luddite. Computers and things can be very useful.
Joan, we have another caller on the line. And
yeah, yeah,
we thank you for your point. You know, and I will resist saying that resistance is futile. But what I will say is, you know, choose your battles carefully so that you can resist meaningfully.
Mm. Right, exactly. And
okay, and thank you for your call. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, and we have Hossein up next. Good morning.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, too. This is a very interesting subject. One way to distinguish between a robot and a human is that the humans cannot take insults very easily. But the robots will distinguish it. So if you really are suspecting that it's a robot, it won't hurt to insult them and see if they catch it and move out. And then,
I like that.
Jose, you are so funny. I have to tell you a story. My brother loves Siri. Siri and Alexa. And apparently the AI said something that he didn't quite agree with. And he said, well, you need, he told it to shut up or something. I don't remember exactly what he said. And it actually chastised him and said, well, you don't have to talk to me this way. You know it. And I was beside myself falling out laughing. And I was saying, you know, well, you know, I jokingly told him, I said, well, that seemed like, you know, some gender disparity going on. I guess Siri or whoever it was didn't like you telling her to shut up. But, you know, you raise an interesting point. And I wonder sometimes if that might be one of the secret inducements that have people using AI without complaints, is that they don't have to deal with the irritation of dealing with human beings. That's an interesting point you bring up. I like that.
Be creative when you do it. I mean, they can program this thing so much. So much. It's just the mind of the programmer. They can revise it, but we are more creative than them.
That this is really good.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And you know, if I'm brave enough when I'm talking to someone or an AI, I'll just throw the insult. And if they are irritated, then I say, "Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were not human." Yeah, that's right.
You know, well, our engineer thinks we should just be forthright and just say, are you AI?
Yeah.
You know, no, I'm Austin. Oh, good golly. Well, I mean, you know, but on one hand, you know, this point that I'm taking out of what Hossein has said is that, you know, engage it as though it were human to figure out, you know, the parameters, but also never lose your sense of humor. Never.
And, you know, this is, you know, we're laughing right now, but I think it also reveals what does it mean to be human?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is philosophical, ethical questions about when is a person a person, or how does personality fit in? And so, you know, we've all read enough sci-fi and know about these things, but this is a reality now, and we have to ask, well, what things do we want, what things do we need, and what does it mean to be human, to have a personality? And certainly, as you mentioned, Celeste, in terms of talking back, certainly you don't have to be human to talk back to someone, but it becomes curious.
Curiouser and curiouser. Curiouser,
I like that.
Well, we still have a little time. If you haven't weighed in, and you know, these conversations are just designed to kind of get you to be a little bit more conscious in your day. And for some of you, I know this is like I said, so less than sexy. It's like AI. I use it every day. What of it? You know, whether you're a boomer, you know, a zoomer, or a millennial or zillennial, you know, it's something that's here. Just use it. You know, it's value neutral. And some of us are thinking, I'm not so sure if it's value neutral. I can appreciate the convenience, whatever. This may not be much of a conversational topic for you. But part of the point is, like we said, to get you aware of what you're doing, to help you make more informed choices, to help you decide, you know, is this the point that I'm going to resist, or am I going to go along to get along with this? And this, you know, like we said, this is talk show. It helps just build community to talk, you know, and I do love it when we get a lot of our younger callers and new callers to call in. I know you might be busy, but if you got a sec, call in and give us your opinion. we also need to figure out, you know, if we are going to have resistance, how to organize that resistance. And one of our callers, I think it was Edie, mentioned checking out the, let me get back to that window here, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, EFF.org, which gives you a lot of information on how to be more mindful in data collection and surveillance and what your rights are and how to fight back. I mean, you know, the revelations that we got during the prominence of Edward Snowden when he released a lot of information, those lessons should not have died. You know, those lessons taught. And we've been under surveillance as long as there's been somebody with eyes and ears nearby that wasn't part of our immediate clan, you know, or cohort. So it's not new. But the ways are new, and it's like, be mindful. Maybe you're one of these people who likes to have tinted glass on your cars, not because you're breaking the law, but you just don't need all that extra glare. Well, if you stop at AI monitored traffic cam and it's a shade too dark, you'll get a ticket. How does that impact you? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Are you thinking about that? Your telephone rings, you pick it up, you look at it, you put it down, but you picked it up at the traffic light, and so it's going to make an assumption. AI doesn't necessarily have imagination. It may be the product of imagination, mm-hmm. but it has none, you know. And so just be aware. And a lot of us don't want to live our life with that level of scrutiny, you know, because that kind of scrutiny does, it just change your mental health for the worse.
Well, you know, as a friend of mine once said when I was young, danger. Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, danger, Will Robinson. But, oh, maybe we should have listened to the robot when we could. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And as you begin your week of activity, and perhaps a lesson is as you walk and as you do the things you do, just take note today or this week, how dependent are you, or we, am I, on artificial intelligence? But let's go to our next caller, Stevie Ray. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I woke up a little late and turned my radio on first thing, and I'm very interested in the topic that you guys are talking about today with the AI and the computers, and I wanted to bring up one thing just to make sure that everyone here is on the same page, because you know how KBOO likes to do the deep dive and the long form journalism. This is a bit of a stretch for some people's minds, and that is going to have to be okay, because when you hear AI, some people think, oh, here comes the wackadoodles. I'm talking about mind control. But let me tell you something. Back in the day, Norbert Wiener, I know, funny, haha, Norbert Wiener invented cybernetics.
Mm-hmm.
And he works with groups of people. I don't know if you guys covered this or not. Their goal, they had a goal. In order for rich folk to put money in the pot to get the job done, there has to be a goal. And generally, for those types of people, I know I need to categorize controlling of others and profiting, reaping that benefit for themselves is generally the goal. So I wanted to put out there that there's this really great, like, it's almost 4-hour film, a documentary, and it's in one disc, and it's called The Minds of Men. The Minds of Men. It's by Aaron and Melissa Dykes. They do a lot of way out there stuff, but this is very, very seriously well documented. Thousands of footnotes, all the references are there, and it starts at the beginning in the 20s, late 20s, early 30s, when Norbert Wiener and all the cybernetics folks started talking about the links between body and mind and how to replicate it with computers, which is why they invented computers. Let me repeat that. Why they invented computers. And then you go on to all of the sneaky red sheet stuff like Snowden. I'm not buying it. God's bless Chelsea Manning. There's two sides of a war in some people's opinions occurring, and we're just civilian casualties. So if you haven't seen Minds of Men, find it, watch it. It's really long. Do a movie night with your friends.
Great.
But it's so important, and I love you guys, and I'm so glad I caught this show, because you guys' topics are so varied, right?
Well, thank you so much for calling.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
Okay.
You got the tip.
All right. Bye.
Mm-hmm. And that movie, it is, make sure it's a movie night, because it's 3 hours, 43 minutes long. Let's go to our next caller.
Eric. Good morning, Eric.
Oh, hi. Good morning. I wanted to bring up the subject of the police planes. They, on Lisa Loving's show on Thursday, Joanne Hardesty mentioned that the police now have a spy plane. And in fact, I believe they have two planes. And if you notice in the wee hours or in the evening, especially on weekends, they're flying back and forth. If you hear a small plane flying, it's probably the police plane. And I'm not sure what they're doing, but, you know, I know they have drones now, and they're going to be using drones soon. But I find the planes really invasive. And I know they can probably tap into your cell phone, you know, through Stingray or whatever. And I'm sure every now and then they help solve a crime. But, you know, it's... To me, it's just over the top, and I just wonder if anyone else notices this.
Okay. Well, I lived in Topeka for a while, Topeka, Kansas, and I have, you know, tongue-in-cheek and serious thoughts from that place, and I remember reading the helicopter reports in the news, and they had a police helicopter that kind of patrolled the skies, so to speak, and the local newspaper would publish the reports. And I remember reading that an apartment complex, a multi-floor apartment complex, had an air conditioner cover missing on like the 10th floor on the south side of the building. And I remember being appalled at this level of specificity. But you know, they didn't care that I was appalled, because it was business and security as usual. But, I mean, you know, it's good to keep that in mind. Like I said, it's not so much that I have something to hide, but it's just that I don't have anything that I want everybody to see. You know, that's my life. Well, let's see. Thank you for your call. Let's see, what time is it? It is 8:56. We just got about a minute. Jennifer, you are next.
Okay, great. Hi, are you there?
Yes, we are.
All right, I'm going to turn my radio off.
Oops.
Okay.
Jennifer, phone off and not the radio. Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you for calling, all of you, and for listening. And it seems like... I think one of the caller mentioned that often do a deep dive, but as we began our conversation, or you and I, Celeste, began talking about this, I had no idea weeks ago we would get here. So where we're going, you just have to stay tuned.
That is true. And, you know, we try to keep our mind open to the things that are happening around us that are conversational or informational or educational or entertaining. So, yeah, we can go anywhere. But we want to thank you for going there with us, and especially with your community connection, KBOO Portland. One of the beauties of a community-based, community-funded radio station is that we're not beholden to corporations. And that's why we have commercials about our products, you know, what we're doing, commercials about KBOO and how we are trying to serve you. Or we have ads soliciting your input. And also know that you can come and learn how to do radio for your communities. You know, KBOO is back open for business. We have a slightly different business model in that, you know, call first and make sure you connect with somebody, because it for various safety reasons for our staff, et cetera, it's not just walk in, you know, not walk in hours. But we encourage you to get involved and to help till and care for your radio station, KBOO Portland.
So continue to do that. Continue to listen to community radio station. Continue to support us. Those of you who are listening live, stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour. Those of you who are listening to us at another time, stay tuned, because at some point in time, Celeste and I will be back.
Yes, that's right. Here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, it's More Talk Radio. We're on Mondays from 8 to 9 a.m. And don't be afraid to join in the conversation. Well, it was good to see you, Cecil. Thanks to our engineer, Ray, for impeccable Always. Work, and thanks to our callers, listeners, and supporters.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
So, how much is that golden doodle or adorable Frenchie in the window? Probably a lot, especially in terms of suffering for its parents, who in many cases are living lives of misery in a puppy mill. On the next episode of Voices for the Animals, we'll be talking with Robert Hensley, senior counsel for the ASPCA, about their push to pass Goldie's Act, a bill now in Congress that would ensure better conditions and oversight for the hundreds of thousands of dogs now suffering at the hands of large-scale dog breeders.
The dog that Goldie's Act is named for was one of the dogs that lived in squalor and tragically was allowed to starved to death over several months while USDA inspectors observed her deteriorating condition, but did nothing to help her.
That's on the next Voices for the Animals, Friday, May 26th at 10 a.m. here on